Good morning. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 4341790, the number you call. 266-4862, that's a WhatsApp number, and you can send a message that way. Or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Michelle Braffitt is the technical operator producer. And Dennis Johnson, your host. We go until 2. It's a Thursday, so we should be having or regular breaks for the regional roundup, the network news from Flo as well. We track the latest at noon. At 12:30, we have the latest from StarCom Network News. Now, listened yesterday to a few of the contributions that concerned migration. Throughout the world, this issue of migrants and persons from different socioeconomic and religious and ethnic backgrounds moving into other areas always seems to generate, I don't want to use the term ill will, but anxieties among the population. It has been acknowledged for quite a while that the birth rate in Barbados was dropping. Remember a former minister in the former government saying, make babies, and you know, there was laughter. I recall going even further back, a gentleman whose radio name was the Cement Man used to ask Mr. Ellis all the time about how many children he's produced and how many he should produce. As a matter of fact, he used to pick on Mr. Ellis more than any other moderator on that subject, because he said that people with a certain type of brain power, and he used the term, that colloquial term that begins with the word B. I'm not sure I'm going to repeat it, but that was his claim all back then. I read the comments about migrants and increasing the number of people in Barbados. I also understand the reason for it. The anxieties, it's interesting listening, because the comments usually refer to persons from the other Caribbean islands. This time it seems extended to persons from other areas. It is a conversation that I'm sure will go on, because, as I said, migration, moving of people always cause those types of anxieties. I don't think 80,000 people are going to descend on Barbados all at once, though. I don't think we've built the capacity to accept them yet. And while it is necessary to, I suppose, increase the working population, one, first has to make sure that there's work to be done, and secondly, that it's sustainable work to be done. So it will be interesting to see how it's built out, how it's sold to the population, and how long it takes the population to accept it as being the way forward, because we're not the only nation in the world that's looking to increase its population. And the enticement to places like Canada, for example, that said very early on that to sustain their social services, they needed a certain number of people working, and that that number would not be generated from birth. So they started to entice graduates of a certain age, what they call the productive years, to migrate to Canada. And it's an ongoing process. And there are other islands in the Caribbean that have citizenship by investment, which has raised concerns in those islands as well. So we shall see what happens with that. And as I said, I'm sure the discussion will continue. Some of it may be because of fear. Some of it may be because of other concerns. What's on your mind this morning? Hello. Good morning. Hello. Good morning.
Hey, morning.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good, man. Well, good in a sense, and yes, frustrating in another sense, because I think I spoke to you about 3 or 4 weeks ago about a leakage on a by the water authority on their side. And I would have reported it, as I said, about three or four occasions. And I know the person who read the meter
saw it
also
and
reported
took it.
Yeah, and you can imagine then it's up to, as I speak to you now, presently, that that matter have not been resolved.
Sir, I...
The barrier is what they're already be talking about. That they have an ad asking us not to waste water.
But perhaps it's not considered waste.
Right, I'm sure that this is over 5 months now that that matter was reported to the Barbados Water Authority. And it's just a little leak. It's just a little leak. So I don't have to pay for it. So I get fed up because I used to call and report leaks when I drove around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I can't get this one fixed. So I thought I'd just call and raise it again and see if somebody would respond. Right. Yeah. Because it's a response I want to it because it's wasting
it's
water.
It's wasting water.
That
well,
is so precious.
Yeah. Sir, yeah. I can only hope that the way, the manner in which calls like the one you've made, the response time is reduced, one. And two, if there is a problem with A, either locating the place, or two, some reason why it can't be fixed. I just feel that if somebody knows that their matter is being attended to, they will feel a little bit more comfortable in waiting. It's when you don't know what's happening. You don't know whether it's logged and they haven't gotten around to it, or whether it's logged and nobody is bothering. Yeah, you know, it just leaves you with a funny feeling that
you
don't.
But if we're talking about using the technology in terms of the internet,
in finding I know, and tracking things down,
And I call and leave a message on the voicemail, it's the address, the account number, blah 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 blah, everything.
It should be easy to find.
Then, it should be easy to find. Then you call and speak to the receptionist who put you through to the customer service department, who you spoke to a representative, and you would promise that somebody will fix it. Then the person who reads the meter, who works for the company,
would have taken note.
They also told me that they reported it as well. I mean, the technology is that bad that it can't be logged and it can't be fixed. It's just a matter where you need one plumber. You don't need a six people and a compressor. You just need one person, a plumber, to come and take off one valves on that side and put on a fresh one, and the matter solved. Because I asked a plumber to look at it, and he said, "No water, so he
has to fix
it." Because he don't have that.
Yeah.
And this is foolishness. And we talk about transparency and accountability and all sorts of things in this country. When one government in and when the other one change, basically it's the same.
All over again.
Party shoot everybody all over again. Now the other question, and this migration thing and this increase in the population thing, is there a particular area that you're focusing on and bringing in people? In terms of, if you're saying that the in terms of the workforce, and you're looking at down the road where the unemployment,
pensions,
return NIS will be impacted upon. Because I remember there was a documentary I was watching, I think it was somewhere in Italy, where all the young people leave that particular town. And as a result, the town has some issues. So I'm just wondering, just wanted to find out from which area you're trying to bring in these people. And then the reality is, Mr. Johnson, is what class of persons you're going to allow to come in?
Well, a couple of things. Again, if, as the Prime Minister indicated, there was a group of persons who did consultations and looked at whatever it is they were looking at, your requirements, the numbers, one would have to determine just what you said. How many people you need for construction, how many people you need for low-end jobs, how many people you need for high-tech jobs, how many skilled, unskilled. Canada, for example, was asking for university graduates of a certain level at a certain age. So they would, what they talk about, your productive age. So let's say between the ages of 18 and 35 if you call that your productive age, the age where people will be married, where people will be having children, because what you want to do is increase your population. So if you have university graduates, if Canada's asking for university graduates between 18 and 35, that's their target market. They know what they're looking for. You must have an idea of who you want and what you want. No.
Right.
And that's just why I mentioned the countries that are selling their passports, so to be. They're calling it citizenship by investment. So in other words, they say if you come into the country and you invest $5 million and you want to become a citizen, we give you citizenship. No.
But before you any in terms of cutting off, I mm-hmm. want to make a point in that.
Sure,
right?
No, so go ahead. No.
All right, because what I'm saying, in that case, no, you have a situation where a lot of non-nationals, well, don't let me call them non-nationals, where a lot of people...
Immigrants, because that's what they'll be. Immigrants. They'll be immigrants. Right. They're coming to the country.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. you know, what I'm saying then is that you have people, all right, who bought properties in Barbados. And they normally come here for, let me say, 6 months to the year. And then go back wherever country they came from. But I think the immigration have a policy is that you could only stay for the 6 months, although you have that property here. I think so.
You could extend it if you want to, though. You could extend it if you want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what I want to say to you, that those persons, kind of persons, should not be bothered about having the extension or going for the extension from the point of view that they have properties here, they're making a contribution to the GDP. So I'm saying that also that should be something that should be looked at, where it wouldn't be asking the person to give the person a passport in a sense, but yes, it will give them some kind of comfort that they don't have to run for an extension or run out every 6 months. If you understand the point I'm making.
Yeah, but so you see, here's the thing. There are some people who will be quite content to own property here, come on and off, stay for 6 months here, 6 months there, and they won't want to be citizens. They may think about it when they get to retirement age and they don't want to travel anymore. But the challenge, sir, is determining why you want to increase by X and what you hope to do. Because if you have, for example, the people that you mentioned now, we have people who are, let's say, over 50, who own property in Barbados. Wealthy people over 50 who own property in Barbados. Unless they employ, let's say, 10 Barbadians each to maintain their property on a year-round basis, and some of them do employ people on a year-round basis to maintain their property. They got people who stay there, people who trim their lawns, people who clean the house. They're there year-round. They pay them to look after their property. They even have property management companies in Barbados. But the problem is, if the reason for bringing people in or inviting people in is to increase your contributions to the NIS, how much will that type of person increase contributions to the NIS? As opposed to, and I again use Canada because of what it is they want to do. Remember what I said Canada wanted to do. They wanted to increase the contributions to their social security network, which means that they wanted to have people working, contributing to tax and NIS, if you want to use those two terms. So in other words, if Barbados created through expansion of hotels, through expansion of manufacturing, through expansion of putting the agricultural lands back into production, if Barbados was able to create, let's say, 50,000 jobs, and you only had 25,000 people in Barbados willing to work in that environment, it would mean, therefore, that you have the opportunity to invite 25,000 people to make up the 50,000 that you need, who will be working, who will be getting a monthly salary, who will be contributing to the NIS, who will be contributing to your tax base, and that's how you would utilize the 25,000 people. But if you, that's different to an Antigua or a Grenada, or I can't remember which other country in the Caribbean did it, that says, okay, your wealthy person from Russia, China, wherever. You invest $5 million in a property in Sandy Lane or $10 million in a penthouse in somewhere. And because of that, I make you a citizen. And you pay me, I don't know, $5,000 for a passport or $10,000 for a passport or whatever price you put on it. That's not contributing to the NIS. That's not contributing to your social network. That's contributing to your income, your tax income. But it's a one-shot thing.
So you have to make the determination
what you want. You have to make sure that the jobs are there, that your infrastructure can carry it. Because that's the other thing. You have to provide the infrastructure to support that type of migration.
Right. So then down the road, and as you said,
and it can't happen overnight.
All sorts of social, all sorts of ethical views in terms of religion. And correct.
Right. And then all those things start coming up. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
And then as a society of, let me say, Bajans, we would then have to learn to adopt to those kind of practices from other people.
Well, and this is the other question. This is the other thing. Whether you adapt to them or they adapt to you. You see, if you're too flexible, sometimes you're overrun. You go along with whatever the flow is. And whereas there are other places where if you go there, you have to adapt to their norms and their practices. And there are people who do it quite easily. And there are others that don't.
Because in Africa now, you have a problem with the Chinese, right? And after a while, when these people come in and establish and doing certain developments, and us as, let me say, locals, we are not getting benefits or doing those kind of developments. We tend to raise a red flag that starts to cause problems. So it's a very ticklish and delegate thing. So I think the only way out is for us to encourage our citizens to get more babies.
By the time it would take to do it, my friend. No, but you see, so here's the other thing. One has to be able to support one's babies and not become a drain on the social services, all right?
Okay. Yeah, because in these conditions, I'm glad I don't have to look for any kind of school clothes now or anything like that.
Me too. Me too.
All right. But I hope next time I speak to you,
there'll be no water running in your road.
That the water, fixed. But I'm calling them. I don't have that foolishness.
Fair enough, sir.
All right.
Have a good one. Brad Stacks, good morning. Hello. Brad Stacks, good morning.
Good morning, Sir Dennis.
Good morning, sir.
Last time I spoke to you, I dealt with in 1937 rats.
And boy, were you emotional. I could hear the emotions in your voice. Yes.
This morning, there's two things that you are creative with me. As a matter of fact, most of you moderators, I said, I do not believe in this big idea about the economy, and I don't believe in entering foreign politics. You remember you said it so all the time. Mm-hmm. Now I can bring my proof to you this morning that I don't listen to economists. I can bring proof in a way that the average man could understand. Then the last administration leave office, what was the unemployment rate?
I don't know without checking. Don't know, really don't.
But for sure, I know it wasn't 36, not a 40.
It wasn't, no, sir. Right. I don't think it was.
And you remember I argued, growing up in the rural Barbados, then sugarcane was the major production or the major crop that kept the country going. And at the end of the day, those sugar workers that toiled that hard could only work 3 and 4 months a year. And at the end of that season, the majority of them were sent home. No unemployment benefit. Nothing to compensate, but they had to survive. Now, it is shocking that you will hear an economist come out now and tell you, not tell me, because I don't listen to them, that the economy is on a good or even keel or doing well. But you know, 40% of the people are unemployed.
Yeah, but sir. Sir. The economists' predictions will be based on a different set of data as opposed to only looking at the unemployment statistic. I don't think in an environment where your unemployment rate is above 40%, any economist worth their salt would say the economy is doing well. I don't think they would say so.
Well, I was hearing up to recently from the central bank and from... I don't listen to them. To be honest, honestly, I do not listen to them. I watch the average man see the sufferings that are going on. I left the theory for them. And I didn't want to talk much this morning, don't I? But it's only because as I hear the minister, one of the ministers made mention, I think tourism or something, so that unemployment is going at a rapid rate and should soon reach 40%.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you got a country, I mean, let us accept that this is COVID. I'm not blaming any government.
Mm-hmm.
What I am saying, that this country is in serious, you know, with 40% of your nation unemployed. I mean, I wouldn't even go as far as that last caller was telling you about bringing in people. If you have your people at a rate of 40% unemployed, what are you going to bring the other people to do?
Sir, you listen to my discussion with the gentleman?
Apart.
Right. I want you to listen to my discussion with you then, because I like to ask people to remove the emotions and the fears from the discussion. I said to the gentleman, and I say to you, one cannot decide to bring 80,000, 50,000, 20,000, 5,000 people to a country unless you have ensured that, one, you can have the capacity to hold the number. Two, your infrastructure, your job requirements, all those things are in place. And I especially use the example of saying, if the economy of Barbados and the infrastructure of Barbados increased to the point where you require 50,000 people in your workforce to work in the hotel industry, to work in agriculture, to work in manufacturing, to work in whatever new areas you have developed, you put the arable lands back into production. Mr. Williams wants to set up a big company to manufacture electric buses. Somebody wants to do something else and build jet skis. So you need 50,000 people. You have a workforce in Barbados where you have 25,000 people who can do the jobs that you need, and you need an extra 25,000. Then you look for those, because you already have in place the demand for them and a place where they can be housed, where they can be schooled, where their financial needs will be met by the various banks you have, where their health issues will be dealt with. That's how you build it. You don't get up one day and say, 80,000 people come now. It can't happen. Anybody who wants to do that has to be a lunatic. It can't happen. And anybody who goes down arguing about that, it's arguing emotionally without thinking it through. It can't be done. So it just can't be done.
That is why I like talk. Listen, I tell you, I grew up in the productive years when things start going forward in the 50s and the 60s.
And you would know that back then.
I could recall when we still had sugarcane going, but we were short of labor. And we brought in people from workers from St. Vincent. Like, that's how you were sending the agents to America to cut cane. The St. Vincent used to come down here at different estates. They went as far as to build homes for them to stay during the crop season. Now, Only last year, it was a big talk about taking workers down to Suriname with agriculture. Now, I want the Prime Minister to really look at this thing carefully. We in Barbados is suffering with two serious problems. One is water, and the other one, well, it is being rectified, I would say, temporarily, which is what we had on the south coast, the sewage.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things got to take into consideration that if we bring in X amount of people, if we could supply them with the amount of water, and if we have the equipment in the sewage system to accommodate the sewage, that would happen. So as we go along, I love to see my country going forward, and I would like to see it go forward continuously. But I want the thinkers and the shakers to understand, especially these cabinet members, you could only come up with ideas if you discuss among the masses what they are seeing. No politician, now no person have all the answers. Deal with the people and let us have a program going forward and not bringing things out of the sky, because all the talk, and I can finish on this, all the talk about what you're going to do and what you plan to do, and those people that home today that don't know where to get the next meal food from, and the national insurance are not up to date with their checks, those are the people that are very, very concerned, and those are the people that could really turn the bucket upside down. Dennis, I'm going to sit back, relax, and I know as long as you on, I can have a good time listening to you.
I hope so, sir. Have a good one. 4341790. This is Down to Brass Tacks. 4341790. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Morning, Dennis.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I am doing all right. And you?
Nice to hear. Because I've heard over the last couple of weeks a lot of callers paying homage to you about the way in which you have the program and the education you give to the public. I also want to join in that, in thanking you for the way you express the public, the things sometimes that we don't understand, and you help to enlighten us.
Thank you, sir. Well, if I can, I will. I hope that I can more often.
And because I really have one that I want you to enlighten me on.
Okay, you want to I'll try.
I recognize you were talking to the Minister of Transport and Works.
On Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. And he was explaining the breach they had in policy, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up from you, you was having extremely difficulty in understanding the breach, because as soon as he finished explaining, you read out a statement that was sent to you from the ministry explaining to Barbadians about the new
the changes that they were going to be painting the road, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I want you to explain or assist me, because I know you was involved in management. I wanted to understand what the minister is trying to tell us, because it is serious, you can't educate us and throw that kind of thing at us and expect we to just walk away from it. No, let us walk through this. You're talking about a change on a major highway, major traffic was that warrant there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of thought. You would have had to tell technical people to look at it. They would have to draw a rough draft, take it to assess people to get it approved. You had to get paint. You had to decide what hours you're going to do it, how much crew you're going to need. I mean, down to the fact that communication came to radio stations, as you said, it was sent to your radio station. How all that could have happened without people at the top knowing?
Well, it depends on what you call the top. That's the first thing. I listened to the minister carefully, and I noticed he kept saying that neither the minister nor the permanent secretary knew about it. He did not mention the chief technical officer, who I think has some clout in the apparatus. I was told by someone almost on par with the permanent secretary. I don't know the organizational chart so I'll go along with what I'm told until I'm told otherwise. My reason for asking the questions that I asked the minister were, like you, I know if there are going to be traffic changes or adjustments made, usually there's a piece of equipment that's put down across the road. I think it measures the volume of traffic.
Right, the traffic that passes.
That passes in that particular area, one. Two, I don't think one can erect posts with signs on it without, you know, having them painted, drawn up, placed there. Which is why I asked him at the end, who's going to pay for the reversal? I don't think it was a decision that was taken by a junior clerk or, you know, the person who sweeps the office or somebody like that. There must have been something planned gone into it. Look, so I don't know. I don't know that I could explain it to you. I asked the questions I asked because I was hoping that, you know, it would be explained in a manner that would not
bring up the kind of
questions that you brought up. It would have put the matter to rest.
Public. If the minister can come to the public to explain something like that, give us some kind of credit that we also understand management, understand what would take place in making a decision like that. You can't tell me that three or four people, as one former prime minister, a group of world boys get together and just mark the road.
I don't think so, sir, especially not in the night. I don't think so at all.
Well, I mean, when I heard him speaking to you, and I recognized he was biting your tongue, as you said earlier, because I follow carefully, you said earlier that someone was in your ear saying we are recording, so you couldn't respond.
Yes, so well, he wasn't in my ear. He told me, it's something I've been told before, that, you know, I need to not interrupt too much because sometimes, recordings are being done for the news.
The news. And with something that, like that in the back of your head, I'm sure you had to...
I walked a fine line. I waited until he was finished and then asked the question. Look, I have to say, right, that matters like these, when you have cases where the public's reaction seems to have brought about a change in what you have done.
Right.
Say you reacted to the public. Say, you know, the decision was reversed because, you know, the public seemed
that it
caused more hardship than we thought it would. Yeah, which is why I also introduced the entire Warrens area. Now, the minister did say that some of these things were given approval before he became minister. I understand that. But if you have a situation where, if you look at traffic management and you look at the movement of traffic in the area, you have determined that there is a problem that can be seen, whether it's fender benders, whether it's a tie-up of traffic.
Right.
Is there not provision somewhere to correct it? So you go to the business or whomever and you say, look, yes, you've been given permission to put an entrance here and an exit there, but that was before we made changes there or before that happened over there or before that other building has gone up. So to improve the traffic flow in the area, here is what needs to be done. We can't do that.
Right. Because you see, the thing that concerns me, And this minister, this is the second time I've noticed he did something like that. He, in the issue of the transport board and the buses, his explanation about transparency, which I have serious difficulty still understanding, because he said that there was a tendering process and everything was fair. Come on, minister, you got to treat me better than that. At the opening, when they were launching the buses or when they were changing, he said that at the podium, there was a tendering process and everything was fair. Oh, you expect me to call transparency?
Yes, until you could prove that it wasn't.
No, we are saying by 2030, we want to be free in Barbados with fossil fuel and getting rid of that. Mm-hmm. We're going on bringing electric buses. You would think that somebody would have done a study that said, look, these electric buses are going to need to be powered by electricity, and we can use the sun. You would So you would expect that transport board roofs and the tops down there would have panels, or somebody would create some small.
They have one, a farm down on Fontebelle. I don't know if, I think it's Water Authority that set it up.
So you are explaining to me then that the buses are going to be taken to Fontebelle.
No. Because I don't know the height of the farm there. I don't know the height of the buses, so I can't say so. What I'm telling you is that I know that government is making provision to have farms set up for renewable energy, and the Barbados Water Authority has used the area down at Fontebelle as one.
Right.
I also, in listening to persons who over the years have made contributions to this program, going back to the previous administration, I remember someone saying that the entire area out here, just across from where we are on River Road, where the market is being created now next to the bus stand there, that entire area, going all the way across to where the River Bus Terminal is, should be covered, and you should have solar panels on top of it to provide solar renewable energy for the transport sector, that there is space there to do it. It's government-owned.
Right.
It's public areas. Why not do it?
You would figure that it would start, you would see the infrastructure again.
Being built, which is the same comment I was making to the previous callers about how you expand your population. The infrastructure has to be there. There has to be expansion. You have to know how much you need. I see a story in today's newspaper, in one of the papers, either online, that I think it was in Barbados today, that the minister was talking about breaking the 100-year monopoly of the Barbados Light and Power Company. Now, if you're going to be building out, and again in St. Thomas, I noticed that there's another solar farm going up there. So it means that you're building out the infrastructure, so you have to know how you're doing it.
Right. So my point is that when they come into the public, treat us with a little more decency and give us something that we can sit down and say, this makes sense. Hello?
Yeah, so I'm listening, yeah. It's just my shoulder got close there.
To constantly throwing these bits and pieces at us as though we won't be able to digest and understand what they're trying to do, it does look like the public is stupid, so we can tell them anything.
Sir, I don't think that is it. What I think is that in a lot of cases, the public does not get involved in day-to-day questioning of ministerial decisions. They do not want to get involved if, to use the caiso that I like to refer to quite often by the late Smokey Burke, my party in power, they say. So as long as it's my party, I really ain't gonna say nothing because I'm quite happy with whatever they do. If it's not my party, then I raise a stink about it. So that's what happens in this country daily.
But we still got to care for the independent thinker, that independent thinker.
How many?
I might not say it's my party.
Perhaps the independent thinkers are like grandma's teeth, few and far between. So, I could only say so.
I still end on what I'm saying. I think the minister.
I hear you. I'm
more taught when they come into the public.
To repeat, yeah.
So when they come to the public, we can take them into our confidence.
Where you have to build it.
Yeah, this is where we want to go also. Mm-hmm.
No problem, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you as well. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
I am all right.
Yeah, I want to just piggyback briefly on what that caller said about your ability to really bring realistic perspectives, especially when dealing with matters of the Caribbean. You're quite excellent. What I want to talk about briefly this morning, I know some people have been responding to Mr. Nasser about what he says about blacks, supporting blacks. I think one of the mistakes that we are making is that we are making a lot of blanket statements that when you analyze them carefully, they have some holes. Now, we are an essentially black country. And therefore, what I am saying is that if black people never used to support black people, I don't know where we would be today as a black people. I think we are making a mistake. We have always supported each other. what has happened is that we have not had the kind of policies, governmental policies, to enhance the black business people to go to the next level. They have had to spend so much time struggling with banks and so on to get where they're going, that by the time they spend 20 or 30 years, we hear that the business has folded or they've gone out of business, and then what we see? We see the big F as failure. But we must remember that while they were in business, they would have put food on the tables of thousands of people. They would have allowed a lot of people to buy uniforms for their children, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I think that we need not to buy into these negative narratives about us whenever they're thrown out there. A lot of people who talk really do not know the struggles that black business people have in their country. They don't know, and they would not believe it until you sit down and talk to them. The struggles with meeting payroll every Friday. They really don't have anywhere out sometimes. So that's all I'm saying. When somebody businesses fold, just don't say, well, this bad business fold. Ask yourself how long they were there, how many people they employed, and how much food they put on people's table. The second thing I want to talk about is this whole immigration thing. This is it sounds very sophisticated, but if we are complaining about the lack of enfranchisement for all people, if we are going to be literally importing people, and if they're going to be coming in with a lot of money, we are going to do nothing really in the long term to enhance our own people. And we're looking at policies for 2 and 3 months, but these policies will knock around for 15 and 20 years. The reason why we are still in 2020 talking about the fact that black people are not where they should be is that we've spent almost 60 years of independence leaving things exactly as they are. We talk about agriculture. The question is, who owns a third of all the arable agricultural land in Barbados? That is the question. Who owns all the land?
I'm told government owns more than anybody else.
Hello?
I was told government owns more than anybody else. The government is the single largest landowner, and then you have other individuals who do.
Right. So if government is the single biggest landowner, don't you think that we had enough time for governments to have a proper land use policy?
Well, sir, and that's the underlying thing, a proper land use policy. And I have always had a difficulty in understanding, and I'm getting messages about the same thing, so I'll underline it. I've always had a difficulty with understanding policy, implementation of the policy, and how the policy can be ignored by whom, and why are they allowed to get away with it. I'll tell you why I say that. I remember the chief town planner, the deputy chief town planner, in a news conference saying, there is enough land in Barbados for housing without cutting up any more agricultural land. And yet still, land is taken out of agriculture and cut up for development. In some of the most arable areas where rainfall is good, where drainage is good, where the soil is thick and rich, and that had been used in agriculture for a while. St. George comes to mind. St. Thomas is another area. So if there is enough land in Barbados for housing development without agricultural land being cut up, and this is said by the chief town planner, why does it happen? So what's the policy? You get my point. If you have a policy that says you have enough land for housing without cutting up agricultural land, who approves it then? It means that the policy means nothing. Or there are ways to get a wrong policy.
Right. I just heard the caller before me talking briefly about what we are being fed.
Mm-hmm.
The question is that we have had more than enough time. 60 years of independence.
Mm-hmm.
We have had no political instability at all. We have had the same two political parties. if you look back at it today in 2020, just the other day, it was a question of garbage collection. Along with that came poor public transportation. We still, you just talk about the fact that we have enough land for housing agriculture. We still have people waiting 15, 20 years on the NHC and all these things. We do not have the economic problem that we have, and all of this talk about the lack of black economic enfranchisement, Dennis, mm-hmm. I respectfully submit to you, we have to lay the failure at the feet of the Barbados Labour Party and the Democratic Labour Party. They have governed the country for 60 years, mm-hmm. and they have chosen not to dynamically address things to really lift the consciousness of the people. There is no, I look into one of the papers every day, I see young people trying with all kinds of things in entertainment, in agriculture, in designing, trying to promote themselves, trying to do things. And then we throw a few dollars at them with a big PR, political PR campaign. These two parties have to be called into account. And Barbadians must stop getting into this negative thing about black people don't like black people and we don't support black people. Let us lay the blame exactly where it should be laid. And let us get on with governing the country.
Sir?
I will now wait on the Trump speech on Tuesday to see what kind of economy we want now in the post-COVID area.
Yeah.
And I will know exactly where we are going. Are we going to be propping up the same people that we've propped up in agriculture for 60 years? We've propped them up in tourism for 60 years. I want to see if we're going to prop them up again. And then all of the creativity and thing is constantly falling by the wayside. Continue the good work, my brother.
Thank you, sir.